Good morning and welcome to the Anglo-Teck Merger of Equals conference call. I am joined by Duncan Wanblad, Chief Executive Officer of Anglo American, and Jonathan Price, President and Chief Executive Officer of Teck, who will be discussing the merger between Anglo American and Teck that was announced earlier today. There will be time at the end for questions. I will now hand to Duncan Wanblad, Chief Executive Officer of Anglo American. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, good evening to everybody. Thank you for joining us today on such short notice. I hope you've all had a chance by now to read the announcement, but in case not, let's just give us a chance to take you through an overview of that announcement before we take any questions. I'm sitting here alongside Jonathan in Vancouver, and I'm delighted to announce that our two companies, Anglo American and Teck, two of the world's largest premier mining companies, will combine in a merger of equals, creating a new global critical minerals champion headquartered here in Canada. By doing so, we are unlocking outstanding value, billions of dollars of value for both company shareholders. This combination is truly compelling. We are forming a major mining company with more than 70% copper exposure as one of the world's largest copper producers, with combined annual production of 1.2 million tons. Ours will be one of the highest quality copper endowments anywhere in the world. We will also be a major producer of premium iron ore from our mines in South Africa and Brazil, and one of the world's largest producers of mine zinc with world-class Red Dog Mine in Alaska. What's more, we have extensive growth options across all three products, as well as in crop nutrients through Woodsmith in the UK. Woodsmith is very much part of our future. AngloTech stands to benefit from proven capabilities in technical and operational excellence, project delivery, sustainability, and product marketing to deliver significant value-accretive growth through the cycle. I'm going to now pass over to Jonathan, who will talk us through how we intend to deliver that value.
Thanks, Duncan, and hello, everyone. This merger is an exciting new chapter for both our companies and a step that we are confident will create very significant shareholder value for both sides. AngloTech will create a stronger, more resilient financial platform with significant scale advantages, including greater flexibility to allocate capital to the highest returning opportunities. This merger will deliver $800 million in pre-tax recurring annual synergies, driven by economies of scale and operational efficiencies in procurement, marketing, and corporate overheads. We will also deliver $1.4 billion annual EBITDA uplift through operational integration and optimization between the adjacent Collahuasi and QB operations in Chile. AngloTech's balance sheet will be underpinned by a larger, more diversified cash flow base, including copper, premium iron ore, and zinc. That balance sheet is designed to fund shareholder returns and accretive growth through the cycle. Let me also reaffirm that AngloTech will continue to prioritize long-term value creation that focuses on safety and health, inclusivity and responsibility, and strong environmental and social performance, building on the proven track record of both organizations. And together, we will generate significant benefits for Canada and across the jurisdictions in which we operate.
Thanks, Jonathan. Building on how both of our companies do business, AngloTech are, of course, committed to preserving and building on the proud heritage and considerable strength of both companies. That is to say, we will continue to play a significant role in the mining ecosystems of Canada, South Africa, the UK, and across Latin America. We will be even better positioned to support the critical mineral strategies of these world-class mining jurisdictions and the priorities of local communities and stakeholders. For Canada, this merger is transformational, bringing the headquarters of a major global mining company here and strengthening Canada's long-standing relationship in critical minerals on the world stage. This is an exceptional transaction for Canada and will generate significant enduring benefits for the country. For South Africa, Anglo American has an enduring commitment of contributing to economic growth through substantial investment that we make in our operations and the social fabric of the country, while supporting South Africa's national priorities. Now, that commitment prevails, and we see plenty of opportunity for further investment in South Africa and the wider region.
Anglo Tech will have a global markets footprint with listings on the LSE, JSE, and intended listings on both the Toronto and New York stock exchanges. We will have a stronger, more resilient financial platform with scale advantages, including greater flexibility to reallocate capital dynamically to the highest returning opportunities. This is a true merger of equals in form and function, with the board of directors to be drawn equally from existing Anglo-American and tech directors and a balanced leadership team of talented individuals representing its diversity, skill set, and ambitions. As noted in the news release, the CEO, Deputy CEO, CFO, and majority of the corporate executive management team will be based at the headquarters here in Vancouver, with corporate offices in London and Johannesburg, along with country offices to support the operations. So, to wrap up, this merger is an immense opportunity for our two businesses that will deliver very material value for shareholders and benefit stakeholders around the world. We are building a critical minerals champion with the focus, agility, capabilities, and culture that have characterized both companies for so long, and that will propel us to the forefront of our industry in terms of value accretive growth, most prominently in copper. We are all really excited to bring this new chapter to life. And with that, I'd like to pass back to the operator to open the call for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question on today's call, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1.
Your question or vote has been registered.
We will pause for a brief moment to assemble the queue. Once again, that is star 1 for your questions today. And our first question now comes from Leslie Hook from Financial Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I have a few questions. First, just about the approval process, which jurisdictions will need to approve this deal. I'm thinking of Canada in particular, given past events. Second, this is quite unusual in being at a zero premium all share deal. Perhaps you could talk a bit about how that came about. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. It's Jonathan here. I'll pick up the approvals point first. Of course, one of the most significant approvals will be the shareholder approvals. Now, on tech side, the threshold there is 66 2/3% of the A and B class shareholders voting separately. And on Anglo-American side, it's 50% of shareholders voting. In terms of the major approval item from a regulatory perspective, yes, this will fall under the jurisdiction of Canada's Investment Canada Act. We have made substantial commitments to Canada through this transaction. In particular, really unprecedented, is the move of the headquarters of this combined company to Vancouver here in Canada. That will be an enduring commitment. And as mentioned, CEO, Deputy CEO, CFO, and the majority of senior executives will be based here in Vancouver. In addition to that, we have announced significant investment in Canada, $4.5 billion across a range of projects and initiatives which are outlined in detail in the news release today. And then, of course, in other jurisdictions, there will be the customary antitrust approval that will be required for those regions in which we operate or where we have significant sales. And I'll hand over to Duncan. Okay,
do you have a timeline on when will the votes take place and when might the deal be complete?
So we hope to get those votes done in the coming months, so perhaps before the end of this year. And then we think in terms of the broader regulatory approvals, that could take between 12 and 18 months to complete.
And do you have the support of the Keevil family for the deal?
Yes, we do. We have irrevocable support from Dr. Keevil and other A-share voters, other A-share holders, which comprise about 80% of the A-share holdings.
Thank you. And on the zero premium all share structure, what's driving that?
Morning, Leslie, it's Duncan. So, look, I mean, definitely not unusual as you described it. I mean, the intention here, of course, is to put both companies together because of the very, very strong DNA that the two companies have. I mean, as a merger, we absolutely get to draw on the best of both, and we don't really need to pay away anything on either side in terms of premier to get the full benefit. So basically, by putting the companies together at a market merger, we really get the shareholders to benefit fully on both sides of the putting together of these two companies. So definitely not unusual at all. Without a doubt, you know, the best outcome strategically for us, and the one that gives us the best option of delivering the value that we see in the business.
And given the long approval process, what about the risk that other bidders could come into this process, either for Teck or for Anglo?
Well, I mean, we can't really talk about what other businesses may or may not want to do. Our job really is to run our companies to the best of our abilities and look for and create the value that we see inherent in our businesses for all of our shareholders. And without a doubt, as we looked through a whole set of options that we had, this was, as Jonathan pointed out, an outstanding opportunity, one that delivers extraordinary value for all of the shareholders. And we're thrilled to be able to be moving along this path.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question now comes from Eric Robert Wrigley from the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'd like a better explanation, please, on how this is a true, as you put it, true merger of equals when Teck shareholders are only owned 37.6% of the company and the CEO is going to be Duncan Wanblad. And right now, the main listing is going to be in London. So how is this a true merger of equals?
Eric, good morning. Thank you for your question. You know, we believe this is both, it's a merger of equals, both in form and function. You know, in particular, Teck will nominate the first chair of this board, Sheila Murray. Anglo-American will nominate the CEO, Duncan Wanblad. And then other directors that have been confirmed at this point is myself as the deputy CEO and also Anglo-American CFO. So we have a balance of the senior leadership of the organization in that respect. The other element here that reflect merger of equals, as you say, we have to reflect the relative sizes of the company and the ownership that we set out here. But there is significant synergy potential here that both of those companies will share in. And we have structured the merger to account for that in particular. So we see a very strong case here that this is a merger of equals, both in form and in function. And we think this is a very compelling opportunity for our shareholders, but also for Canada.
Okay. Can I just a follow-up question on QB and Collahuasi? How will those operations be merged? I mean, you have Glencore's in there, Japan's in Collahuasi. Will Collahuasi ore be shipped to QB or vice versa? Have you thought that far ahead?
Yes. Look, I mean, it's pretty early days, as you can imagine, and we don't really want to get into all the detailed assumptions associated with that. But a couple of key principles here are that ideally, you know, given the co-location of those two resources and the two plants, the industrial logic is pretty self-evident here. You know, Collahuasi has a significantly higher grade and longer life compared to Quebrada Blanca, and of course Quebrada Blanca has today, you know, one of the state of the art processing plants, has access to water and infrastructure that Collahuasi doesn't have today in the context of an expansion up at Collahuasi. So you can see simply the logic of moving some of the high grade ore from Collahuasi into the Quebrada Blanca infrastructure makes an enormous amount of sense. So just simplistically, about half of the QB plants would be filled with Collahuasi ore, And that just in and of itself would provide an uplift of around about 175,000 tons of copper per annum, and that's just from the grade differential between the two. There are other optionalities which we are yet to work through in the details, such as increasing throughput again into the QB plant from the Rosario pit up at Collahuasi. We believe that the capex that's going to be required for this is in the order of $1.9 billion. That would be $700 million plus or minus for plant modifications, and then $1.2 billion for connecting the two operations generally by means of conveyor belts here. And then obviously we would have to get through all the regulatory processes and the engagements with all the other shareholders, of course. But as we see it today, this is probably one of the most talked about synergies that exist in the industry. We've certainly seen the benefits of these come through in the likes of Serpentina and Ministerio, and the earlier announcement that we made this year of the combination of the mine plans between Andina and Los Bronces. So this is another one of those adjacencies that makes an extraordinary amount of sense. It will make an extraordinary amount of sense for all of the shareholders.
Okay, and last question on this. Presumably, Glencore has been fully apprised of this merger and is supporting it.
Eric, no, we haven't spoken to Glencore about this merger, but we do know for sure that that Glencore have been for a long time very interested in getting the adjacency benefits out of Quebrada Blanca and Collahuasi.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And up next now, we have Clara Denina from Reuters. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Can you explain why Anglo shareholder are getting 4.5 billion in special dividend and tech shareholders are not? Is that part of the sizes of the companies? And how did you think about the integration across three different headquarters? Is there a risk of organizational complexity, and will you continue to review your portfolio and let people go across the different sections?
Morning, Clary. So look, three key reasons that underpin that dividend. First of all, it certainly allows for a much more balanced participation for both Anglo American and tech shareholders in terms of the future value delivery of this company. It has also been devised in consideration of what a really efficient opening balance sheet might look like, as you would imagine. And then, of course, the coming together of these two companies with their balance sheet now allowed Anglo American shareholders to realize some of the proceeds from the ongoing portfolio transformation that we're in the process of doing, and that is not dissimilar, of course, to what tech shareholders benefited from when they did the EBR transaction. So I think just generally fully representative of a merger of equals as we've described earlier. Just in terms of your question related to complexities of head offices, et cetera, we certainly don't believe that's true. Of course, we both run operations in different countries in different parts of the world. Having two small corporate offices, one in South Africa, one in London, is not a material complication at all. The fact is the headquarters would be moved to Vancouver, and that is where the bulk of the functions of the business will be. It's where the management of the business will be. But certainly, we will still have representation in the countries where we operate, and given the JSE listing and the LSE listing, just makes an enormous amount of sense to have that small corporate representation in those countries.
Thanks. Can I also ask, and maybe it's a stupid question to Jonathan. So the review of the QB2 announcement the other day, was that in view of this announcement, or it's something completely different and there are issues at the project?
No, not at all, Clara. There was no connection between that announcement and the work we've been doing here to put this fantastic merger of equals together. At Quebrada Blanca, we announced a comprehensive operations review and a QB action plan. We have some work to do there to catch up with the pace of development and construction at our tailings facility, which we expect to work through toward the end of 2026. So, you know, we are very much looking forward to working with Anglo-American, and in particular at Coyoapi, where Duncan has already outlined the pathway to unlock significant synergy from that operation. And as Duncan noted, they are some of the most compelling industrial synergies anywhere in the industry.
Clara, I might just add, you know, for the avoidance of doubt here, yeah, that we've obviously run through a pretty extensive due diligence process, which included a number of technical visits. And I'm really confident that Quebrada Blanca is a great asset.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you not worried that shareholders will feel that is a bit of a sticking point for the deal to be completed until that is known, what's happening there is known?
Yeah, well, look, as I was saying, you know, we've done a really extensive bit of diligence here, and as I said, a number of technical site visits to the operation. And having been through a ramp-up similar to what Quebrada Blanca is going through with Quebeco, I completely recognize the challenges that they're going through. And the reality is that that these major operations do take time, and particularly in the early phases of setting up a tailings dam. We believe it is critical that they have to go at the right pace to set things up in the right way for the long term, because if you do that right, the benefits are there for absolutely decades to come. So, you know, Quebeco had to deal with a similar issue in terms of a relatively high proportion of the fines deporting into the sands fraction, which you use to build the walling of a tailings dam. And it looks like what Quebrada Blanca are doing is very similar to the work that we had to do at Quebeco in terms of taking the right time to optimize the dewatering and the deposition of the sand into that wall. That has to be the priority. And certainly we believe that a measured approach here would, of course, impact production in the first couple of years, but it is absolutely the right approach to deliver the significant and inherent value of these assets. So again, just to absolutely underpin, I really do share Teck's excitement on the full potential value of Quebrada Blanca. And I think we now have an opportunity to take things to the next level with the Coyoacy adjacency.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And up next, we have Javier Blas from Bloomberg Opinion. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my question. I have two questions for Jonathan, if I may. Why you are selling the company at a zero premium, considering that the moment that the announcement leaked, your share prices in New York went up nearly 24%, an indication that the market was expecting a significant premium. Sell side reset overnight came with expectations of a premium between 20% and 40%. So it's quite a significant, I mean, it seems that the market is saying that you are selling quite cheap. So why is that?
Javier, thank you for your question. Firstly, to be quite clear, we're not selling the company. We are working together with Anglo American here to create a new company through a merger of equals, part of which involves the relocation of the global headquarters to Vancouver, Canada, and as I've mentioned, an equal representation of board members from both companies and a equal split of management across the companies as well. Teck shareholders will have access to significant future value creation. We've outlined synergies here of $800 million per annum, which come through areas like procurement, marketing, and corporate overhead. And then we've announced synergies of $1.4 billion of annual EBITDA uplift to be created through the combination of QB and Koyawafi. And also our shareholders get access to an unrivaled global platform predominantly focused on copper. In 2027, we expect more than 70% of the earnings of this company to come from our copper assets. And we will combine six world-class copper assets in very, very good mining jurisdictions to create something of very high quality that we expect to be of enormous interest to equity markets. This will be the fifth largest copper producer, and it will be the second largest publicly traded copper-focused company. So we think there's a lot of value to be created here for our shareholders, and we're very excited to have been able to put this together with Duncan and his team.
And my second question, thank you. My second question is just kind of a follow-up on this one, and it's, do you run a process? Do you soak other bids, or were you only talking to Anglo-American?
You know, we have been working directly with Anglo-American for a period of time on this merger of equals because, in part, there are unique and compelling industrial synergies here that would be very hard to realize through any other course of action. We believe this is the best course of action for tech shareholders, and as I said, they can participate in significant upside here, both in the near term, medium term, and long term.
Thank you.
Thank you. And from Bloomberg News, we now have Tom Bisolfo with our next question. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Duncan. Good morning, Jonathan. Thanks for your time this morning. Can I just talk a little bit about to be very clear, you were describing this as a nil premium deal. Just trying to work out some of the share kind of valuation this morning. We get that you're paying some kind of premium for tech based on closing price. Was this offset by the special dividend you're paying Anglo shareholders? I'm just trying to get my head around exactly, is this 100% a nil premium deal?
Yeah, well, morning, Tom. Yes. Yeah, so look, as I said to you, I mean, there's some very good rationale for why we pay the dividend. It makes enormous sense, but it certainly does aid the null premium or the app market, the merger dynamics of this thing. But without a doubt, I can't overemphasize what Jonathan's just said about the value that we create here together going forward with the combination of the very high quality assets that we've got and the very compelling logic of the underlying synergies. As I say, just once more, the balance sheet will be really good and strong coming out of this thing. And as I say, we now have the opportunity on the back of that to pay our shareholders some of the proceeds from the portfolio transformation. So all pretty much logically set out on that basis.
Great. And also just again on the nil premium, obviously both yourselves and Tech turned down pretty significant premium bids in the last 2 years. I just wondered what kind of support you're expecting from your shareholders for this when obviously there were significant premiums on the table in the not-so-distant future.
Well, I can't speak for Jonathan. Well, he should speak for himself here, but the bid that we fended off a while ago was done for all the right reasons at that particular point in time in terms of the interests of the Anglo-American shareholders. You know what has happened post that in the context of the portfolio reshaping and the opportunities that we have now created as a result of that and the ability to do something like this, we believe is significantly more valuable for our shareholders.
Yeah, and from my perspective, Tom, similarly, we went through a portfolio simplification exercise, particularly through the sale of our very large steelmaking coal business that created a platform which would enable us to embark on a transaction like this one. And what we're creating here really is unrivaled in terms of its scale, in terms of its quality, and in terms of the identifiable synergies, both corporate procurement and marketing, but critically also true operational synergies that exist between the two world-class assets of Kraoati and QV. So this, you know, for us is very much the right deal at the right time, and we believe there is significant value creation potential ahead of us.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question now comes from Holly Williams from the Press Association. Please go ahead.
Good morning. And thank you for taking the question. I think first of all, I'd just like to ask if you could kind of explain the reasoning behind keeping the primary listing in London for the combined group, given that you're moving the headquarters to Canada. And also be keen if you could just give us a bit more detail on the synergies, the $800 million of synergies a year. What is that likely to mean for staff? Are you envisaging that there may be job losses? And if so, at what scale?
Right, Holly, yes. Look, the rationale for keeping the London listing is simply that London markets are very deep. They understand mining, and this transaction is certainly most efficient by retaining the UK top coat. But we continue to expect to get material benefits from both the Toronto and the New York Stock Exchange listings. So that could be not as a similar setup from some of our peers. And then, of course, we do continue to benefit from the JSE listing. So we're going to be in a position to, as a new leading global minerals producer in the world, you know, have great access for investors from all around the world.
Yeah, and with respect to the synergies, Holly, your question there, you know, we've talked today on this call about $800 million of annual recurring pre-tax synergies that we can generate from this transaction and the combination of these two businesses. Nearly $500 million of that comes from procurement opportunities. Another $100 million will come from marketing-related opportunities. And then approximately $200 million will come from corporate business and other overheads. And of course, part of that will be removing the duplication that we will have in our organizations and driving for efficiencies through the most appropriate organizational structure to support the business going forward.
Can you give an idea of maybe how many jobs that could relate to, or what percentage of the workforce you envisage perhaps?
So as you would imagine, you know, we're looking at a closed period for the transaction of between 12 and 18 months. Through that period, we will do significant integration planning, but that work lies ahead of us. And of course, the realization of synergies will only commence once we have completed this transaction. So there's a lot of work ahead of us. We've done significant work to identify the synergies available, but the phase ahead of us now is to put together the plan by which that will be realized.
Okay, thank you. Could you just say how many staff you will have combined globally?
Don't know that number off the top of our head, Holly, at the moment. No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And we move on to a question from Alec Hogg from BizNews. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of South African-related questions, Duncan, obviously for you. Have you spoken to your biggest shareholder, the PIC? And indeed, are there any requirements, any approvals needed from South Africa? And then two kind of ancillary things, any updates on De Beers? And does this deal have any impact on the long-term future towards Kumba?
Morning, Alec. Yeah, no. So, of course, we have spoken to the PIC. As far as South Africa is concerned, there are no statutory approvals that are required for this, but have spoken to various ministries in government about it. And as far as the beard is concerned, we continue as per the original program. In the process of doing either a divestment or a demerger, but with the divestment looking more likely, and that's the pathway that we're on. What was the last question that you had?
Kumba.
Kumba fundamentally core and pivotal to the portfolio, progressing again there. With the UHDMS project, as we had announced.
And maybe a follow-up, what risks have you identified to this transaction?
Well, I guess the most significant hurdles we need to surmount are all the regulatory approvals from the time that we get through the vote to the end. Of course, a risk that exists in all sorts of mergers is actually the putting of the two companies together, the integration. And as Jonathan pointed out earlier, we are going to spend an enormous amount of time planning that out to the nth detail and be absolutely rigorous in its execution. I think that we're in really great stead here. One, because this is a merger, and that we are putting both companies together for the greater benefit, and as opposed to it being a takeover in any way, shape, or form. And secondly, I think one of us mentioned this a little bit earlier, but there are very complementary cultures that exist in this company, very similar views of what responsible and sustainable mining should and could look like in the world. And we think that, on that basis, we would be able to very materially mitigate any sort of integration risks, which generally tend to be the ones that bring these sorts of mergers down.
I was more thinking along the lines of a counterbid, of a hostile perhaps being resuscitated by BHP.
Whether that's a risk or not is not going to stop us doing trying to do this deal because this is the right deal for our shareholders, as I mentioned earlier.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our final question for today comes from Jonathan Leake from the Daily Telegraph. Please go ahead.
Morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jonathan Leake, I'm the energy editor at the Telegraph. So, a quick question about London. So, you've got your headquarters here. There's obviously a bit of sensitivity in London about the movement of companies out of London to North America. Could you give me a sense of the scale of your operation in London at the moment and how that will change when all your management functions shift to Vancouver? And as a corollary, could you just give me a quick overview of your operations in the UK, such as, for example, I think the polyhalite mine in the North Yorkshire Moors, which has been troubled for some time. And then finally, could I ask you to give me a quick breakdown of your share ownership, just in terms of the countries in which your shares are held?
Oh, okay. Jonathan, thanks. Look, the head office in London at the moment comprises obviously the executive management, a number of the group functions, our marketing, a portion of our marketing business, and of course the Woodsmith project, which is what you spoke about earlier. Woodsmith is still a project that we like a lot in form. But there are three key criteria that we require for that to ultimately be sanctioned. And I've said them before, so I'll just repeat them now for the avoidance of doubt. Is one, we do need to complete a feasibility study, and that feasibility study needs to be competitive in the context of everything else that we've got in the portfolio. Secondly, we will sanction that project. I think it is appropriate to do so, even in the merge co, we would have a syndicate partner for that, and we certainly wouldn't want to be doing the full sanctioning of that project until such time as we'd materially got through the restructuring of the business. So all of those remain true. Just in terms of Anglo-American shareholder split, we have about 20% of the register held in South Africa, about 30% in the United Kingdom, and 35-odd% in North America.
Okay, and can you just tell me again, in terms of your London headquarters, what's the number of staff employed there now?
It's in the order of 600 to 700. People.
And how might that change?
Well, as Jonathan said, we've got to do the integration planning. We've got to understand how the functions will work, and there will be a fair representation, equal representation of positions available to both tech and Anglo employees for the roles that come out of that.
But you'll be shrinking significantly.
Not necessarily.
But probably. Is that fair? Hello, is that fair?
Yes, look, I mean, it is true that the London office will become more streamlined as a result of this. So we will have a much smaller corporate office in London than we do today.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you. And that concludes today's Q&A session. So I'd now like to hand the call back over to you, Mr. Oneblood, for any additional or closing remarks.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on this call. And thank you for your questions. Hope you have a good day. Goodbye.